Thank you, brother. We're going to break Daniel 9 down into three parts. Three classes is going to be my aim anyway. Bad news is we're only going to cover verses 1 and 2 today. Next week we'll cover verses probably 3 through 23. We're going to focus a lot on prayer. So if you haven't made it a point to read Daniel 9 yet, that would greatly behoove you in our discussion for next week in our preparation for our class. I'm only going to have a few things to say about the text next week. I really want to open it up to the audience. It's just a very practical lesson, I think, that we can have about prayer and some things that we can look at and we can apply. And then, 2 weeks from today, we'll look at verses 24 through 27. And you may or may not know that Daniel chapter 9 is probably one of the most challenging passages due to the last three verses, or the last four verses of the chapter, which we read Daniel's 70-week vision. But thankfully, mercifully, I've got 2 weeks before I've got to try to make an attempt at explaining that. So we'll look at the first part of Daniel chapter 9. So it's a little bit different than the previous chapters that we've looked at. 7 and 8 really focused a lot on the visions that Daniel witnessed with the animals and the beasts. And then in chapter 8, where we had the battle of the ram and the goat representing the Medo and the Grecian armies that would clash and the things that would come about being foretold, where the terrible oppressor Antioch Epiphanes would arrive and begin persecuting the Jews very harshly. You read chapter 9, what you're going to find, a lot of the content there is really focused around a prayer that Daniel's saying. And if you've never read this prayer, it's got a lot to teach us. And we'll talk about that next week and see what Daniel's prayer in chapter 9 teaches us about how we can pray and how we can strive to pray like Daniel. But in response to Daniel's prayer, God's going to send once again Gabriel, an angel, to interpret Daniel's request and make known to him something that's soon going to come to pass. This chapter revolves around and really culminates in the last few verses where we see the prophecy of 70 weeks. One of the most challenging probably passages to explain, and you'll probably understand more as we get there. But let's go ahead and jump into our portion of the lesson today. Daniel chapter 9, we're just going to read the first couple of verses. So verses 1 and 2. Got to really lay some groundwork for the latter part of the chapter. That's what our focus will be this morning, and I think we'll be able to do that. Let's go ahead and get started. Daniel chapter 9, beginning in verse 1, please. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus of the Median descent, who was made king over the kingdom of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, observed in the books the number of the years which was revealed as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet for the completion of the desolation of Jerusalem, namely 70 years. So you stop and you think about everything that's happened in the book of Daniel. The people were there in bondage, and Daniel, as he's reading through the prophecy of Jeremiah, he comes to focus on a particular portion of Scripture. And you think about the attitude that the people have had. They've been there in Babylonian captivity. Jerusalem had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar about 66 years previous. The temple had been torn down. The walls had been destroyed. The city was left desolate. The people were spread out. Many of them were now living in Babylon. Some were exiles in Egypt. Some had stayed and tried to remain in the very desolate portion of Jerusalem. And they're crying out. They're crying out for God's help. Regardless of the circumstance, when you go through the fire, which God's people are obviously experiencing in this portion, as Daniel's writing in this portion of their history, the question you always ask, and we ask it too when we experience tribulation and hardship, how long? How long is it going to be? How long until God delivers us from this fire? How long until God removes the oppressor from our life? And we sing, I don't think we sing here in this songbook, but in our supplemental songbook, there contains a song called How Long Till the Morning. And that's exactly the point of that song is we're going through this challenging time. How long until the morning comes? We're surrounded by the dark of night, and our enemies are all about us, and it appears that Satan and his demons are victorious, but we're looking for God's deliverance. And that's the cry of the children of Israel as they're there in the land of captivity, being oppressed by the Babylonians. How long was God going to punish them? When would he remember them and show them his mercy? And we see in verse 2, which is really going to be the focus of our passage, Daniel's reading and he's contemplating this passage. It was written by Jeremiah, this prophecy written by Jeremiah. Now, we mentioned previously how there were two prophets who were contemporary with Daniel, Ezekiel and Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah prophesied a good bit before Daniel, but their careers, prophetic careers, did have somewhat of a bit of overlap. Jeremiah's career began during the reign of Josiah, well before Daniel's. And he died probably 20 years before Daniel pens the things that are taking place in Daniel 9. We identify this as the first reign, I believe, the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, was when Daniel is speaking about this portion of what's taking place in Israel's history. So Jeremiah's been dead about 20 years. But you think about that, that's not a long time for prophet's work to be described and recognized by the Israelites as prophetic. And if you've got the questions in, you may have thought about this. Why do you think that is? 20 years later, Jeremiah's only been gone for a very short period of time. Why is he, although a contemporary of Daniel, why is he recognized as being a true prophet? Dave?
Well, they're sitting in captivity.
Okay.
So that'd be the first big clue that
hey,
this guy's right.
There you go. Exactly. The sign of the prophet is if what he speaks comes to pass. During the reign of Josiah, Jeremiah said, hey, you need to just submit to Babylon. That was God's will. That was God's purpose. We'll see why here in just a minute. But whenever that came to pass, because Jeremiah foretold that, that gave validation and credibility to the fact he wasn't speaking as Dave identified all the other false prophets that say, no, you need to withstand Babylon. You need to resist. If they'd listened to Jeremiah, then it would have been a whole lot easier on them and just gone into captivity. So despite the fact that he was a contemporary of Daniel, his work was considered prophetic and it was recognized as inspired. Now, Daniel is obviously, and it's interesting to see Daniel once again, is interested in the words of God coming from other men. He's contemplating on a passage from Jeremiah chapter 25, where we look here at a couple of verses. Go ahead and turn there. I thought I had that on the screen, but go ahead and turn there. In fact, we're probably going to be done with Daniel 9 for the time being. We're going to look at Jeremiah, and then we're going to go back to Leviticus. But for now, turn your attention to Jeremiah chapter 25. This is the passage that Daniel's referring to that he was contemplating on. It's recorded for us in Jeremiah 25, verses 11 and 12. And in this we read, when we get over there, this whole land, speaking of the Israelites in Jerusalem, this whole land will be a desolation and a horror, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Then it will be when 70 years are completed, I will punish the king of Babylon, and that nation declares the Lord for their iniquity, and the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it an everlasting desolation. So we read in that passage, Jeremiah foretells that the Chaldeans are going to persecute God's people for 70 years. Now, part of really what complicates Daniel chapter 9 when you look at the 70 weeks prophecy is the fact that so many people, the premillennialist and the literalist and the modernist, all of them want to take and they want to apply literal time to the 70 weeks prophecy. And we'll come and see how that's a period of 490 years. So in verse 2, we see, back in Daniel, verse 2, Daniel identifies, as per Jeremiah, this captivity that was going to take place would last for 70 years. And so since so many of the challenges come from a literal interpretation of the 70-week prophecy, what I want to do is I want to spend pretty much this morning to lay down the groundwork and to refute literal time, the necessity for a literal time interpretation in Daniel chapter 9. And once we understand Daniel is enforcing and imposing on us the need for literal time, then we'll understand when we get to 24 through 27, we don't have to apply literal time to that as well. In fact, we'll be able to more easily understand. And so we're laying the groundwork to do ourselves a favor and make our understanding of the 70 weeks vision a little easier. But I want to spend a few moments refuting the literal time in Daniel 9. Let's just first recognize Daniel has used time symbolically throughout the course of the book. You go back to 4:16, that's where Belshazzar is going to be punished. That's where King Nebuchadnezzar is going to be punished for his pride. As a result of that, we see there, let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let a beast's mind be given to him. Let seven periods of time pass over him. So whether that was years, weeks, months, we don't know. We understand symbolically that Nebuchadnezzar had a lesson to learn. And that was what the significance of the transformation was. Not the exact amount of time he would suffer, but rather until he completely understood that the Lord reigns in the kingdoms of men. It's a symbolic use of time. And again, there, and that's not chapter 4, verse 16, that's chapter 7, where the saints are being persecuted by this fourth great beast. It says they're going to be given in, the last part of the verse, they're going to be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. So 3.5 years, that's symbolically representative of this period of persecution that God's people are going to have to undergo. So just looking back at the book of Daniel, we see Daniel uses time in some instances symbolically. Now, I'm not saying that every time, but I'm saying he does use it symbolically, and so we have to keep that option on the table when we consider understanding what he's talking about in these various time frames in chapter 9. Another thing that strongly in my mind convinces me that Daniel's not talking about literal time is because as he speaks of this 70 years that Jeremiah spoke of, 70 years Israel's going to remain desolate, 70 years the Babylonians are going to capture and persecute God's people, is because when you look at what history tells us, it's not a literal 70 years. In 605, and we've nailed these dates down pretty solid within no less than 1 year. 605 BC, you've got the first deportation. And Daniel was included in the first deportation when Nebuchadnezzar came and he took some of the people from Jerusalem and Judea back to Babylon. Now, he allows them to continue to exist. He allows another king to come up and reign for a period of time. This is the first deportation. And this is when the prophecy of the 70-year persecution of the Israelites would have begun. That's 605 BC. The fall of Babylon, which is spoken of by Jeremiah that we just read, the destruction and desolation that was going to come about then, 539 BC. Now, when you add those numbers up, you know what? It doesn't equal 70. And so you've got a literal, when you just do a little simple math, you've got a literal 66 years that the children of Israel were oppressed by Babylon. Now, you come to Daniel chapter 7, they say 70 years. Jeremiah says 70 years. And some scholars want to say, well, they're just rounding up. I don't believe that to be the case, and I think you'll understand why here in just a bit. But when you look at the literal amount of time that the Jews spent in Babylonian captivity, it was 66 years. And so that, to me, says that Daniel is probably not speaking literally, because if he was, he was wrong. And that's not something that I simply can accept. But as we understand, as we talk about time periods, specifically in the Old Testament, and especially when you're applying it to apocryphal literature, we understand numbers represent something symbolic. So I suggest to you that there is symbolism in the 70-year captivity prophesied by Jeremiah and spoken of by Daniel in Daniel 9. So the rest of our class will be devoted to trying to understand the symbolism of the 70-year captivity Jeremiah spoke of. It starts back in the book of Exodus. Babylon's captivity, you have to understand, Babylon's captivity of Israel was not arbitrary, and it's not been arbitrary from the beginning. You go back and you read the first chapter, you see God gave Judah into the hands of the Babylonians. God was involved in this process. See, their punishment was actually rooted in the Sabbath law back in the Old Testament. You may go ahead and be turning to Leviticus chapter 25. We're going to be reading from a good number of scriptures from Leviticus. I want to help us understand the symbolism of the 70-year captivity, but this punishment was rooted back in the Sabbath law. Now, let me just read to you from Exodus 31:13. You can go ahead and turn to Leviticus. As you speak, as for you, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, you shall surely observe my Sabbaths. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord God who sanctifies you. So there in that passage, God there warns Israel to keep Sabbaths. Now, when we think of the Sabbath, what do we think of? We apply it usually very specifically, don't we? It was that day of rest, right? When we think of Sabbath, it applies to that seventh day, Saturday, in which the children of Israel were to rest from their labors as God rested from his labors after creating the world and all that's in it. And so when we think Sabbath, we think seventh day, we think rest. No work, no travel. But that's usually, maybe it's just me and my limited way of thinking, that's how I've always viewed the Sabbath. But back here in Exodus, the Lord refers to his Sabbaths, plural. And so once we begin to understand that the Sabbath law applied to more than just the resting of the people on the seventh day, we begin to understand what's taking place here in Daniel. I'm going to go ahead and turn to Leviticus. I had y'all back there, but in Leviticus 25, read with me verses 1 through 5. This is a little expounding on the Sabbath law. Okay, the Lord then spoke to Moses at Mount Sinai, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I shall give you, then the land shall have a Sabbath to the Lord." The land gets a Sabbath to the Lord. Verse 3, 6 years you shall sow your field, 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in its crops, but during the seventh year the Lord shall have a Sabbath, the land shall have a Sabbath rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall not sow your field nor prune your vineyards. Your harvest after growth you shall not reap, and your grapes of untrimmed vines you shall not gather. The land shall have a sabbatical year. So we see here in Leviticus 25 that every 7 years the children of Israel were to plant nothing and were to reap nothing from the land. So they were to allow the land to have its rest just as they rested on the seventh day. Now back in Exodus 31:13, this was very significant because God says in the latter portion of that verse, "For this that Sabbath, my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations." Now remember, circumcision was also a sign of the covenant. This sabbatical rest of the land and the Sabbath that the people honored on Saturday, this was a sign of the covenant between them and God. Now imagine the children of Israel and the culture in which they would have experienced this. They didn't have the things that we do that allow us to preserve and keep goods for long periods of times. There was no refrigeration. Preservation was significantly less than what we have today. And Twinkies. I mean, we could live off Twinkies because you can't destroy those things and they last forever. And so even if all of the food were gone and nothing would grow, we could just all eat Twinkies and we could live for a little while anyway. But they didn't have any of those things that preserved food. So they had to go an entire year without planting or harvesting. Now, when you continue reading in Leviticus chapter 25, what you find out is that the year of Jubilee, which is every seventh 7 year, the 49th year, there was to be a double Sabbath. So there was a period of time every 50 years when the land would rest for 2 years. No planting and no harvesting, no gathering in. Now, they would eat from the fruits, but they would only eat from it as they had need, kind of like they ate the manna as they had need. But they weren't to plant. Now, you imagine the faith that a person has to have to go for an entire year without planting and harvesting. That's what they were to do every 7 years. And imagine the faith that has to take place, especially during that year of Jubilee, when you've got 2 years where you don't plant, you don't harvest, you don't gather. That takes a lot of faith as God's people. And the time of Moses to Babylon captivity, as we read about it, it was permeated by Israel's unfaithfulness. Now, what do you think was one of the first laws ignored when the children of Israel were unfaithful to God? The Sabbath rest, right? Not necessarily the seventh day, but more so the seventh year. The harvesting the land. That was one of the first commands to go out the window because they were worshiping other gods. They were only caring about self. And so who cares? We'll just plant on the land in the seventh year. So the land would not receive its Sabbath rest that was specified. And so understand, the captivity of the children of Israel in Babylon was not arbitrary. And it was, for that matter, not just solely for their punishment because they worship foreign gods. But you go to Daniel 9 and 11 and look at what he says. "All Israel has transgressed your law, turned aside, not obeying your voice. So the curse has been poured out on us, along with the oath which is written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, for we have sinned against him." So he refers to what's taking place, their captivity in Babylon, as the curse that had been poured out on them. Now look with me in Leviticus chapter 26. You're there, you stay in Leviticus. Any passages that we need to look at aside from that, I'll read or I'll have on the screen. Leviticus 26, verse 2. "You shall keep my Sabbaths, reverence my sanctuaries, I am the Lord." Verse 33. However, and he's going to go through this process where Israel says, if you don't honor my Sabbaths, you don't keep my law, I'm going to punish you. And he goes through famine, disease, and all of these other terrible things. And it culminates in verse 33 with this punishment if they refuse to keep God's commands. "You, however, I will scatter among the nations and draw out a sword after you, as your lands will become desolate and your cities become waste." So he says, I'm going to scatter you amongst the people if you don't keep my laws. Ultimately, this is the curse that's being poured out on the children of Israel if they don't obey God's command. Scatter you among the nations. Some of Israel was in Babylon. They'd been deported into captivity there. Some had fled to Egypt for refuge, and so they were living in another land that was not their own. This punishment that's taking place by Babylon captivity was specified because they broke their covenant with God. A major part of that being that they ignored the seventh year in which they weren't to cultivate the land. Now you look at verse 34. Here's the purpose of the desolation and the spreading out of the children of Israel. Then the land will enjoy its Sabbaths all the days of its desolation. While you are in the enemy's land, then the land will rest and enjoy its Sabbath. So the purpose of this punishment, this deportation to Babylon, the scattering to Egypt, the desolation of Israel, was so that the land could enjoy the Sabbath rests that the people did not honor every seventh year. Now, go ahead and hold Leviticus, but turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 36. 2 Chronicles chapter 36. You know, as we conclude, really, the history of the children of Israel, for all intents and purposes, short of the book of Nehemiah and Ezra, which is the rebuilding and the release of God's people to return to Jerusalem. Look at what the author of the book of Chronicles tells us of the carrying away of the children of Israel in Babylon captivity. Chapter 36 of 2 Chronicles, verses 20 and 21. He says, "Those who escaped from the sword he carried away to Babylon, and they were servants to him and to his sons until the rule of the kingdom of Persia." And listen, here's the purpose: to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths. All the days of its desolation, it kept a Sabbath until the 70 years were complete. And so the chronicler tells us that the purpose of the deportation and being sent to Babylon and being scattered to Egypt was for what? So that the land could enjoy its Sabbath rest that it missed out on. 70 years Israel was going to be away from their home. 70 years the land was going to enjoy a Sabbath rest. And so there, once again, you'll remember that 70 years Jeremiah spoke of, the 70 years Daniel referred to as he spoke of the prophecy. And as the writer of 2 Chronicles tells us, they were in Babylon for 70 years, so the land, for the purpose of the land, enjoying the Sabbath rest. So let's understand now the symbolism of the 70-year captivity. The symbolism of the 70-year captivity, you think about this, and you understand it now not as some arbitrary punishment for the children of Israel's disobedience and idol worship. It was specifically for their crime of ignoring the Sabbath rest of the land. And so you think about this number. The number 7 is a Sabbath number. The seventh day was the day of rest. And so that's the Sabbath number there. The number 10, that's symbolized by, represented by this idea of completion. Now when you multiply those numbers together, what do you get? 70. And so what I suggest to you, as Daniel and Jeremiah and the writer of 2 Chronicles uses this number 70, they're not using it in a literal sense. What they're saying is 70 years, the land's going to have complete Sabbath rest. It's representative and it's symbolizing the fact that Israel, who ignored how many 7-year Sabbaths? We don't know, but it was probably a bunch just throughout the course of their disobedience to God. And so the 70 years that the land was going to rest is representative of the fact all of the Sabbaths it missed would be completed. It would receive a complete Sabbath rest from all of the disobedience that the children of Israel neglected in that time period. And so what God was trying to get Israel to see was this is not going to be a literal captivity for 70 years. Because when you look at the math, history tells us it was only 66. But the number 70 is used to help the people understand, first and foremost, their transgression by not observing the Sabbath rest of the land. And then the completion of that rest that would take place, all of the writers of the Bible use it and refer to this number 70 years for the purpose of helping the people see the land was going to rest until it had completed its Sabbath rest that it had been missing out on. The fact that the captivity was almost 70 years, only secondary to the fact of what it is God's trying to get us to understand when he uses this time period to be described as 70. So now that we understand the 70 years in Jeremiah's prophecy in 25 is symbolic, we can understand in Daniel chapter 9, as Daniel refers to this 70-year period as a symbolic number as well, because it's not a literal number. Because if it were a literal number, then Daniel would have been wrong. And if Daniel's wrong, then the one who inspired Daniel was also wrong. And so we understand the number can't be literal. We understand how it represents symbolism now. And so when we get All of this to say, when we get to verses 24 through 27, and we're looking at the 77s, the 70-week prophecy, we understand we don't have to impose a literal interpretation of years on that. We don't have to impose 490 years. But that's what so many people want to do when they get to Daniel 9, and we're going to see when we get over there, the numbers really don't add up for a very well-fitting 490 years. That's just going to make our job of understanding the 490-year or 70-week prophecy significantly easier. So you see there the symbolism of the 70 years referred to by Daniel, spoken of by Jeremiah. I know that's a lot to process. Any thoughts, comments, questions? Dave?
I got one.
I'm not going to promise an answer, but you can ask. The chronicler said was the purpose of it was for the land to have its Sabbath rest, right? When we read 2 Chronicles 36, he said the purpose of the captivity was so that the land would have its Sabbath rest. I mean, that's how I gathered it, right?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's completely. I tell you, when I came across and prepared for this, it's taken me a good bit of time to do so. It's completely the opposite of what I always thought. You know, I always thought like you're saying that the 70-year, the time in Babylon was a response to their transgression, was a response to everything that they had done, the idolatry, the rejection of God, the killing of the prophets. I thought that was the thrust of the punishment. But, you know, I come to Deuteronomy and I read, Moses says, he warns and he warns and he warns, if you do these things, I'm going to send famine, I'm going to send plague, I'm going to send pestilence, I'm going to send starvation. And finally he says, you know what, if it gets to the point your transgressions become full, I'm going to send you out so the land can have the rest. And 2 Chronicles 36 says the purpose of that was so that the land could have its rest. And so it seems to be tied into that sabbatical law that was neglected by the people. But like I say, it's reversed from everything I've always understood it. You know, I'm kind of like you, how I always saw that it was more so their rejection of God and their disobedience that was the purpose of the punishment. That's why they went into captivity, or so I thought. Yes. Yeah.
It's absolutely
right.
With their behavior and their lack of willingness to repent. And so I just, in my mind, in my pea brain here, I'm trying to set around.
Well, I guess the simplest way that I could explain it for me is, I try to be a simple guy too. Now I understand this explanation is everything but simple, and it probably disrupts a way a lot of us have thought about this. But you got to reconcile 2 Chronicles 36 with everything else, and the fact that the writer of that book said the purpose of the captivity, and so I guess where that would lead me, although I guess I haven't verbalized this, the purpose of the captivity was to punish the people and allow the land to have its Sabbath rest. And so you kind of got a two for one. One, God's promise is being fulfilled that the rejection and disobedience had gotten so bad that the people were going to be driven out of their land and driven to different countries for the purpose of the land having its rest. Because that Sabbath rest was that significant to God. You got the guy on the Sabbath that was picking up sticks, and when it was found out what he was doing, God tells Moses essentially, this guy needs to be stoned to death. And so right there in their mind, he's trying to help them understand the significance of honoring the Sabbath, just the seventh day rest. But you've got here a repeated offense of every seventh year where the land doesn't receive its Sabbath that God declared it to have. And as 2 Chronicles 36 said, the purpose of it was for that. Now, I'm with you. I would say more so the purpose was so that the land could have its rest as God had decreed, but also a byproduct of that was God's people had sinned and God's people had disobeyed. And so they also were not only being punished, not only was the land receiving its rest, but the people were punished in captivity due to their time spent there. It's kind of just really a flip-flop in purpose of the captivity from the way that I always have thought about it. So concluding, where I come to this conclusion, I suppose, is just having to reconcile what the Bible tells us in Jeremiah and in 2 Chronicles. being for the 36 years, so that the land may have. And then you go back to Exodus and how Moses essentially tells the people, this is what's going to happen if you don't observe my Sabbaths. And so it's hard for me to wrap my mind around, but it's the only way that I can reconcile that captivity, is to understand that the purpose was that the people, the land could have its rest, and tied into that just as significantly was the fact that the people had transgressed. And you're right, Jeremiah is a book of God's, how badly God detests what Israel's doing and their disobedience. And that's really what's going to lead to Daniel's prayer. Now, I did have a few things I wanted to say about Daniel's prayer, but we'll look at that later. Yes.
One quick comment. You brought a lot of new stuff in that I hadn't really thought of it that way, but it makes some sense. But could it be that he's punishing them for everything they've done, not just the Sabbath of the land, not just for rejecting him as God and worshiping false gods, but the captivity is for all the things, the length of the captivity could be for the purpose of the Sabbaths of rest for the land. You know, once he had decided to punish them, okay, I'm going to base how long I'm punishing them for on the Sabbaths part. Would that be possible?
Well, the only trouble I have with is saying that the period of time is significant. Are you talking about a literal 70 years?
No, I'm just saying,
okay,
the length of time, you know, whether it's 70 years or the 66 years,
okay, so,
a complete Sabbath. You know, he's saying,
yeah,
once he decides to punish him, this is how long he's going to punish him for.
I have no problem with that, with saying that the punishment was because of their disobedience and their rejection, but the time... But also, going back to Exodus, the purpose was so that the land could have its rest. God made it noted that it was significant and it was important for the land to have its rest. And that was at least tied into the purpose of the captivity. Maybe that was the purpose of the 70 years. Maybe the rejection of God was, as you say, the purpose for the punishment, but the 70 years was... Why the reason that the punishment was for 70 years was so that the land could have its rest. That's a good understanding of it, Xavier.
This is just speculation, just in an attempt to reconcile, you know, what we said. I think that, as we've always thought, that Israel is being punished for everything that they've done, including the Sabbath, but also that, you know, there are many ways to punish something, but maybe the method, two birds, one stone kind of idea, maybe the method that used the punishment was punishment for all the sins, and then the reason was captivity was to give that land rest, so that it still reconciles the Chronicle where it says, in order to fulfill the land's rest, and still the idea that they're being punished for all their sins, not just...
Sure. I hope I haven't come across in saying this, because I know I made the thrust of this about the neglect of the Sabbath rest. That wasn't their only crime by any means. When you go back and you read, as David said, God's disgusted with his people in Jeremiah. And captivity is coming for these people whether they want it or not. Josiah was Israel's last good king, but it was during Josiah's reign that Jeremiah began to say, you need to submit to Babylon. And he tells them, you're going to be carried away. Okay, so God's had it with these people. He promises Josiah, because of his righteousness, rest during his kingship, rest during his reign. But whenever Josiah's reign comes to an end, that's when things start to tank for Israel. And the nation as a whole begins to experience the punishment and the plagues that God had promised he was going to send on the people. Not solely because of their neglect of the Sabbath and the land's rest, but largely in part because of that, but also because of their disobedience and their idol worship and all of those other things that David mentioned that they had done. All of their other crimes, they were being punished for that as well. And so, you know, those are good points that have been brought forth about possibly the duration being so that the land could receive its rest, and both of those being accomplished, the people being punished on one hand, the land receiving its rest on another. Very good options for interpretation. Dave? Yeah.
Then you have a Sabbath for the land, and then you have the Jubilee Sabbath. Or is this what he's referring to when he says Sabbaths in plural? Is all the different ones that are set up, they're still rest.
Sure.
Is that what you're putting forth there?
Yeah, I would have to go back and look at the original. I can't read the original, but I got a version that can tell me, you know, this is the original and this is the meaning of the word as scholars have defined the Hebrew. I'd be interested to see if it said like sevens, like plural sevens, because the Bible can't distinguish between the Sabbath and sevens or Sabbaths, which, like you say, I would lean more toward yes, because I'm tying in what God says in Exodus, this honoring my Sabbaths are part of the covenant that you and I have, and that's part of the terribleness of the transgression, is because this was part of the covenant with God that the people had, and they neglected it. But not solely the honoring the Sabbath day, which even perhaps the Israelites might would have done if, even if they were worshiping false gods, but more so the other sevens or Sabbaths or rests that were included, such as you're saying the year of Jubilee, the land rests on the seventh year. I would probably include those in that from the way I understand it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Does anybody else say anything different other than my Sabbaths, plural? Any other interpretations render that differently? Okay, I'm reading from New American Standard, so. All right, well, I mean, that's my understanding of the text. Some good ideas have been put forth that you can keep in mind as well. Like I said, Daniel 9's kind of challenging. The whole purpose that we looked at this morning was to understand, and the point remains, regardless of the captivity and why it was, the purpose behind it, the point remains that we're not looking at a literal 70 years. And since we're not looking at a literal 70 years, when we get to verses 24 through 27, we don't have to impose literal time on that as well. So good points have been made, Dave. I appreciate you bringing out, and Tommy and Xavier, your comments included in that. As to the purpose of the punishment, very good things to consider as we continue to study and think about this. But point remains, it's a symbolic period of time, regardless of what it represents. The land received its full Sabbath rest. That was the 70 years, not literal time. And so when we come to that challenging part of the text, we don't try to impose literal interpretation of time on that as well. Any other thoughts, comments, questions? We've ran just a little bit over, so we'll wrap it up. All right, I appreciate everyone's participation in our discussion this morning.